We are back on the air. This is episode 4 of the Raw Retrospective, part of the Monday Night War podcast series. Find us at MondayNightWar.com. I am at Wrestling Savant on Twitter. That is also my handle on the Squared Circle subreddit. He is at Flawless Brian. Give him a follow as he discovers the wonders of Twitter. And go to MondayNightWar.com for the full experience that the Monday Night War podcast series has to offer. It is there you can connect with the show's Twitter and Facebook page, as well as find the link to our RSS feed. The Monday Night War podcast series is available using any device. Just plug the link to our feed into your preferred method of subscribing, downloading, and listening to podcasts. With that out of the way, let's set the table. With the miracle that is the WWE Network, we can now relive the glory of both Monday Night Raw and WCW Monday Nitro. And as a companion to these broadcasts, I, along with my cast of friends, will walk you through time through the lens of 2015, almost 2016, with some lifelong fans that were all watching then and still watch today. It's going to be a blast. I promise to give you plenty of insight, and everyone on this broadcast is good for a laugh now and again. So remember, watching along with us is optional. Just hang on and enjoy the ride. So with that out of the way, let's get started. Brian, how goes it?
Just getting over a case of battle cat scratch fever, actually. But other than that, doing great.
Well, I'm glad that you made it and you're with us here today. Let's get this show on the road. We are in the Manhattan Center, February 1st, 1993. That's the original air date, ringside, Vince McMahon, Randy Savage returns to the broadcast booth, and of course, our favorite, Rob Bartlett.
What it is what it is.
Kicking things off strong as Tatanka blasts out of the curtain to lock up with Damian Demento, who makes his second appearance on Raw here. He is talking to himself in the ring here, totally committed to that character.
Thanks a lot, Vince McMahon.
The return of the tagline, uncooked, uncut, and uncensored, rears its ugly head today, now that we've got the three original commentators back at the booth.
Is it me, or does Tatanka, does he kind of look like Mark Wahlberg?
We'll have to do a Google image search, split them, put them side by side, and maybe Photoshop a red scalp onto Marky Mark.
There you go. Yeah, Tatanka, I mean, he's one of those guys. I just saw a shot of him maybe like 2 years ago or so. The guy's still huge, like broad chest, broad shoulders, still like a really big dude. He's one of those guys that looks the same. He seemed to like never age, you know, kind of like Marky Mark. Talking about his debut, didn't he kind of have like a long undefeated streak on television? They were hyping him pretty big when he first arrived.
Well, here in February of 1993, he is presently undefeated, yes.
Damian Demento making great use of his 3 minutes of fame here on Monday Night Raw by applying a chin lock for about a minute and a half.
Do not, I repeat, do not call me a jobber.
Talk about right place, right time. Damian Demento's run was a short one in WWF. It coincided with the debut of Raw, so in just under a month, 4 episodes in, he's already making his second appearance. I think he trumps Bret Hart at this point. Who was the champ?
Yeah, I mean, Bret Hart showed up. He showed off his admiral from the Queen's Navy jacket. But Bret Hart, yeah, has yet to wrestle on Monday Night Raw here. Now, Jeremy, how about this Tatanka guy? I like his look where he's got, like, an actually ascending 20-degree angle from, like, his ear to, say, the front of his face where he's shaved off his sideburns or any kind of hair that would hang down over his ears. If he'd had a pair of glasses, which are generally, you know, parallel with the ground, right, the arm of the glasses, he would actually look kind of ridiculous. It's kind of like, you know, you're leveling up your sideburns and one's like a little lower. Let me get that one. Damn, now the other one's longer. And you trim that up. And then after a while, you like finish and you've kind of started to actually trim your sideburns up the side of your head to where it's like above your ears. Let me just leave it off there. It's if it goes up any higher, I might look ridiculous.
Yeah, before you know it, you end up looking like Butthead from Beavis and Butthead, where it looks
right,
like you just,
exactly.
Your hair gets put on like a helmet.
Exactly, like a bowl cut.
You know, I was looking up a WWE.com article over the holiday weekend here, and it showed some of the present-day 2015 WWE superstars, still shots from their first match, and The Miz, of all people, about 10 years ago, his first match on SmackDown was with Tatanka. That was during his mid-2000s run. That just made no sense to me whatsoever, but he still looked like Tatanka from 1993.
Yeah, the guy, he never aged. He has like these broad shoulders, barrel of a dude. He's really big. You know, he was part of the Million Dollar Corporation towards the end of that run there.
The Native American turncoat, yes.
Right, the Native American turncoat. Didn't he actually win the... He either won the tag belts, or I know he was... and I know you'll correct me. I know you've got the scoop. But I think they had him teamed up with Bam Bam Bigelow or something.
Correct.
Right, Bam Bam. And I know they had title shots. They were kind of pushing them in title matches. And then the corporation kind of dissolved, and Tatanka disappeared again, only to show up, like you said, and give them his first match there in the 2000s.
Yeah, he also was a teammate of Sid, I think. They even wrestled in the ill-fated Raw Bowl coming up in just a few years. But we are getting ahead of ourselves. Tatanka still undefeated at this point as a face. Demento giving him a run for his money here, but I see Tatanka is hulking up.
Yeah, doing some kind of dance. He's getting psyched up here. I don't know if it's raining outside in Manhattan or if the sprinkler systems are going to suddenly turn on in the arena here. He's doing some kind of dance, and it worked for him. It psyched him up.
Demento making great use of his 15 minutes of fame as he sucks up 5 minutes of airtime with a chin lock. You know, chin locks in 2015 Monday Night Raw episodes are the universal sign of a commercial break coming up, but we were lucky enough to sit through it all as Demento and Tatanka were laid out mid-ring for half the match.
Macho Man wearing some kind of bespeckled headlock on hunger t-shirt. Doesn't really match his crazy green hat with the green sequins, but Macho never failing to disappoint.
Rob Bartlett looking like Father Guido Sarducci with that outfit. We've got Brett the Hitman Hart shown entering the ring inside Madison Square Garden as most of the roster is on hand for the kickoff to the Headlock on Hunger Somalia Relief Campaign. We covered this initiative in detail in episode 2 of the Raw Retrospective. Brett is carrying what is basically a publisher's clearinghouse, giant cardboard check, as he speaks to the crowd on hand.
Now, I can't help but notice Ric Flair in the crowd there. The last episode of Raw was his retirement, the loser leaves town match. He lost to Mr. Perfect, and they were plugging this event as coming up the Friday after that Monday Night Raw. Are they trying to pull a fast one? Why is Ric Flair at this show?
I wish that they paid as close attention to logic gaps now as they did then, but as the third episode of Raw signed off the air, Vince McMahon did make mention that Ric Flair was going to have to honor his weekend commitments. I imagine that they didn't want to upset the fans that were going to be at this large Madison Square Garden show. That was like their mecca. It still is. He was already advertised, so.
Man, look at these fans in the crowd. There's like three guys in the crowd on the stationary camera with like championship, full-size championship replica belts. Well, watch out. Someone almost got a finger cut off.
Back in the ring, we've got Vince and his pompadour as he welcomes, and I quote, the one and only Brutus the Barber Beefcake. And yet, giving new meaning to strutting and cutting, paying no attention to the fact that fans are as close as they are. He is in the camera about to chop a finger off.
Beefcake also sporting that to hell with sideburns look with his mullet. I don't know. It looks like they did a pretty good job reconstructing his face. He'll talk about that in a super exciting promo. Oh, he's gotten started. Here he is looking at the canvas.
Brutus never been known to captivate everyone's imagination on the microphone. However, he is back. Vince McMahon is making a big deal out of this. He essentially is using his personal struggles to get over the immortal Hulk Hogan in this interview. We'll talk about that momentarily, but essentially he was involved in a parasailing accident, and they explain how they had to basically reconstruct his face. And before the accident, he has one thing after another that are taking him down a peg in his life. First, his mother has cancer and unfortunately dies. Then his father dies from a heart attack. His wife slaps him with divorce papers and takes Brutus for everything that he's worth. These are his words. And then the extreme parasailing accident, rearranging his face and laying him up in the hospital. Brutus, about to give up on life, was saved by none other than the red and yellow of Hulkamania. He explains during this interview that as his eyes were swollen shut, his jaw wired shut, 8 steel bolts and 30 screws, 500 stitches later, Brutus is back to take on all comers, and it's because of the power of his friendship with Hulk Hogan. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I mean, Hulkster there for him, you know, wearing the red and yellow. I mean, I guess it's a more comforting image when, you know, your swollen eyelids finally peel open and you see a glimpse of something, some kind of blurry image of blurry collection of colors and images. And it's not Bill Cosby at the end of your bed in the hospital room. It's Hulk Hogan.
What's wrong, Van Albert?
There's a girl I really like, but I think she only likes me as a friend.
You know what you need to do, man?
Take no for an answer?
No, man. Try some Spanish Fly.
But I don't do drugs.
Not for you, dum-dum. For her.
What's Fat Albert going to do? Be true to his morals, or is he going to do what he has to do to get what he wants with the ah-ah and the oh-oh, it's a music time!
Don't take no for an answer, better yet.
Well, during this gut-wrenching account recapping the days of Brutus's life, we are shown not one, but two fans picking their nose in the crowd, so everyone is clearly into this return of Brutus.
These fans are transfixed, and it's like the moving words of Brutus Beefcake as he stares at the mat, looks at Vince McMahon in the eyes about every 2 seconds, for only 2 seconds, about every 30 seconds. The people that aren't picking their nose are kind of sitting there with this look. They're thinking about what they need to pick up from the groceries on the way home. I saw a woman laughing. Actually, if you look, there's a little black dude that has a t-shirt that says Bob Backlund, WWF. And I think that's the same guy that had the Real World's Champion Ric Flair t-shirt. This guy must run some homemade t-shirt making thing out of his garage here.
Oh, and look at this kid. He's like two knuckles deep up his nose.
Yeah, I saw that. This is what little kids did before the days of cell phones, right? If you had this promo now, everybody'd be kind of like looking at their phone, looking up Grindr dates, doing this and that.
Grindr?
You know?
You know, I would say, what are the odds that the director would catch someone picking their nose at the exact moment that they do? But it seems like that's happening a lot in this crowd. There is Vladimir the Superfan. We are keeping track of how many episodes he is ringside, and that is 4 in a row.
Not picking his nose, too. I'm proud of him.
Oh, she's kind of hot.
Yeah, and you can see some boobs under the...
Yeah, a little under boobs.
Oh, she's kind of got the cheeky cottage cheese on the...
Mm. Oh, yeah. She does not look like somebody you take home to mom. Woo! We are treated to a commercial for WrestleMania 9, and back inside the Manhattan Center, we have the most revealing outfit yet on a Raw ring card girl, as the music most associated with the late, great Owen Hart is playing to signal the entrance of high energy as they take on Iron Mike Sharp and Von Krause. Von Krause would later become known as Vito LaGrasso, most notably the first leader of the Baldies in the original ECW, and then wearing a skirt under the same name on SmackDown during the era of the brand split. Iron Mike Sharp is my favorite enhancement talent ever. I'm trying to be politically correct here.
But now, let me bring in one of the stars of the World Wrestling Federation. He hails from Canada.
It's about time, you know.
Iron
Let's get to
Mike
the important
Sharp.
Stuff. The important stuff. The people want to see me. I'm a Canadian, you know. I'm from Canada.
I know, and...
That's right. Are you from Canada? Where are you from?
You're so smart.
It doesn't matter anyway. The interview is talking about me. I'm the Iron Man. And I'm big, and I'm strong, and I'm looking for competition. You know what? I got a lot of problem finding competition. People are afraid of me. Something about being a crowbar and a... cement mixer and all that. I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard
I'll tell
that.
You
I've
something.
Heard you're a crowbar.
I'll tell you something. I love to wrestle. I love to fight. And I love to win. And I'm a winner.
Take a breath. Let me ask you. What's this you have on your
That's
arm?
Right. Look at that arm there. Look at that, huh? You know how I built that arm? You know how I built? I didn't build that in the gym with pumping little dumbbells and taking
mixing
steroids.
Cement,
I was out
right?
in the woods. I was swinging an axe. Swinging an axe. Building arms. Power. That's real strength. When I get in the ring and I get this arm swinging just like a big axe, boom, and my opponent goes flat, and you know what? You know what? I win again. I win again. I'm a constant winner. Of course, anybody could see that. Look at me. Look at me. I'm a pitcher. I'm a winner of victory, and I love it.
Brian, who is your favorite enhancement guy?
For the heels, it would definitely have to be Iron Mike Sharp, and I'll follow up with a nice anecdote about him after I state my favorite face enhancement talent was none other than SD Special Delivery Jones. He was my favorite. But Iron Mike Sharp, I'm telling you, he got me kicked out of the house on a couple broadcasts of Saturday morning wrestling. He'd be on, like you said, groaning and making noises at every move that he takes, and put him in an arm bar. He'd be like, no, right? You know, rawr, rawr, growling. I'd have to like turn the volume down. I'd be looking around for my mom, like, oh, where's she at? You know, she only had about 30 seconds of tolerance for Iron Mike Sharp. And his matches usually went at least 4 minutes. She would be like, don't you have something better to be doing? Get outside, whatever, right? Because it was in the days before the internet and all that. So I couldn't go to my room as punishment. I'd have to go outside. So every time I saw Iron Mike Sharp, I had to turn down the volume. As an adult, I fully appreciate the lumbering, almost caveman-like antics there of Canada's greatest athlete, Iron Mike Sharp.
If you listeners are unaware of just who Iron Mike Sharp is as we sing his praises, go onto YouTube and just do a quick search. He's got his black trunks pulled almost up to his nipples, and he's huge. He looks like a villain or a character from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Pretty much. I always kind of thought he had like a David Hasselhoff-ish kind of, right, the really curly hair and the body hair and kind of the hunched over, kind of a hunchback looking character, would wear this forearm pad, right? He had like maybe some kind of forearm injury. He would rotate it around, right, and kind of turn it around on his wrist. And then he'd swing his arm all wild, kind of like a wind-up, right? Like he's going to do the old windmill punch. And then, right, he'd run at the guy and go for a clothesline or a loaded, some kind of loaded forearm shot. And really big reach, long arms on the dude, big trunk, big legs. Really kind of like a dude that if you just gave him a push, I mean, I don't see – I could picture that guy being a believable monster or some kind of big galoot.
We'll call that his five arm.
There you go. Another guy with a five arm.
High Energy's matching gear that you would only see in the 90s originated with the new foundation team of Jim the Anvil Neidhart and Owen Hart. Once Bret Hart moved on to a successful singles career, basically colorful hammer pants with a cummerbund and checker accents. If you can close your eyes and envision that. The Anvil walked away from active competition for a while at this point, co-hosting syndicated programming like Superstars with Vince McMahon usually, still wearing the gear that now matches High Energy. So, strange.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of interchanged the Hart family members and then thrown in Coco. Coco had been around a while. I think he was in, gosh, what was he in? A couple WrestleManias in a row. Had to have been at least five. He was kind of a mainstay, right? A veteran. So they kind of teamed him up with the newcomer, Owen Hart there. And good description on the ring attire, like suspenders for when they enter the ring, checker pattern, cummerbunds. It sounds ridiculous, but it'll look more ridiculous when you go on the WWE Network and check it out. Or if you're watching along, listening along with us.
Think CNC Music Factory videos mixed with like Fly Girls from In Living Color.
Right, that's about it.
As Raw throws to a break for commercials in their own right, promotional consideration is paid for by the following.
SquadRatCurler.com specializes in shirts for gym rats, gamers, wrestling fans, and more. If you want to style and profile,
get your curl on.
If you want to survive the danger zone,
get your curl on.
If you want the most elite custom-made tees and tanks in the world today, you gotta get your curl on at SquadRatCurler.com.
Ooh, yeah, buy the shirt, dig it.
You are listening to the Raw Retrospective, brought to you by the Monday Night War podcast series at MondayNightWar.com. All right, back from break. It is Doink versus Typhoon. In previous episodes, I have stated my opinion that evil Doink does not get his just due. Matt Bourne, as the performer behind the paint at this point, really had the demented heel clown character perfected.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be a wrestling clown, which a lot of the wrestling magazines and a lot of the experts back in the day had predicted would be the downfall of the WWE's cartoonish presentation of wrestling. Once they said, oh, a wrestling clown, they had predicted it. Now here he is, literally a wrestling clown. You've got to make him legit. And Matt Bourne, pretty much as tough as they come, really kind of stiff when you watch him. Good amateur background. Guy's not a joke.
Well, I guess if you're a journeyman like Matt Bourne was and you finally make it to the big time, you know, bright lights of WWF, New York City, and Vince McMahon says, we're going to make you a clown, right? Then you have to go all in. And it's like you can't be half pregnant, right? So you might as well just roll with it. And he does a very good job of it. I have to say that during this matchup, though, it looks like he's got a personal problem with Typhoon because he is just going at him with several leg takedowns and then a very stiff elbow. Now he's got him down trying to work and wrench his arm. This is not your typical match against a 400-pounder. It's pretty funny to watch him get twisted up into a pretzel by somebody half his size.
Yeah, he is. I mean, Doink, first of all, you're taking a single leg on a 400-pound dude, and you're just picking his leg up like I would pick up luggage on the way to the airport. Typhoon now has literally had almost no offense except for maybe doing like a beel toss, blocking an armbar. Now he's just squashed him into the corner, which is where you don't want to be wrestling a big dude like that. Doink is like slapping him hard. He's dropping big elbows on him. Had him in a front face lock and did a float behind and then just kind of pushed his head down, just kind of pushed his face into the canvas with all his body weight and then stepped off of him. And it's kind of like that wasn't even legitimately a move. It was just, it looks like he's just, now he's slapping the tar out of the dude.
You know what this match reminds me of, as far as my enjoyment level in watching it, is when they asked on Nitro Steven Regal, now known as William Regal, to put over a young upstart by the name of Bill Goldberg. And this was where Goldberg was like 4-0 or 7-0, so very early in Goldberg's run on Nitro. And Steven Regal, who has since said that he wasn't in his right mind at the time, decided to go out there and make an example of Goldberg. So he doesn't put over any of his offense. He's putting thumbs to his eyes. He's stepping on his feet, the back of his knee, giving him very hard elbows in the face. And Goldberg just doesn't know what to do. Same reactions, you know, when you're out there in a worked environment and you're getting legit elbows in the face. Same reactions out of Goldberg that we're seeing out of Typhoon. Let's talk about Typhoon for a second. Also known as Fred Ottman, the brother-in-law of the late pro wrestler Dusty Rhodes, late great. He is one of the two uncles of Cody Rhodes, Stardust, the other being Jerry Sags. Ottman made his first appearance in the WWF in a June 1989 dark match under the name Big Man Steel, using Slick as his manager. Later that September, his name was changed to Tugboat Tyler, then Tugboat Thomas, as he portrayed a fan favorite on house shows until he officially debuts on WWF television. That took place on January 27th, 1990, so about 3 years to the day of this match taking place on Monday Night Raw. Tugboat Thomas, that moniker, was soon dropped in favor of just simplifying it as Tugboat. His first match was against Iron Mike Sharp. His costume consisted of a red striped shirt, white pants, and a sailor's hat. He would go on to success in a tag team later with Earthquake as the Natural Disasters, which is what he was doing now, before moving on to WCW as the Shockmaster. So that is your history lesson on one Fred Ottman. And look at this roll-up! The only way I can explain this is he's pulling on the crotch area of Typhoon's trunks. He might have got a little bit more than fabric there, and Typhoon is none too pleased. That, my friend, is a visceral reaction. This looks like maybe they were not best friends behind the scenes.
Yeah, it looked like he really didn't get all of it on his first attempt there at grabbing the trunks.
Oh, he got something.
Kind of, you saw like a pop of the fabric, and then the fabric stretched out, right? But his first attempt at grabbing the trunks to roll them up didn't look like it had a lot of pull to it, a lot of elasticity. So he was fishing around in the undercarriage of the tugboat there, which, like you said, Tugboat not too happy with that roll up.
Yeah, if I was Tugboat, I wouldn't be happy if someone grabbed my anchor as well. After this match, we are treated to that zany WWF Mania commercial, and then look at this. The host of WWF Mania is ringside with Vince McMahon, Todd Pettengill, making a Dorf on Golf reference just to remind us all that it is 1993.
Yeah, Dorf on Golf, Dorf on Crutches, Dorf Skiing, all kinds of great videos that you could find in the bargain bin when they were first produced. But Todd Pettengill, what was that show that he hosted? It was kind of like a recap show, had all kinds of corny jokes. I don't know where they picked him up. Maybe a stand-up comic. What's the background on this guy?
Todd Pettengill was actually plucked from New York radio, as Rob Bartlett was as well, but he left to work for WWF full-time for a number of years. After his run with WWF, he did return and is still running a morning show in the New York City market. Todd Pettengill also made a cameo by hosting the In Your House box set.
That makes sense. He's kind of got, you know, a face for radio. Now, here's a serious crowd shot here, if you will. What are all these fans all looking somber about? What is this?
It was just days prior to this episode airing live that Andre the Giant passed away. Andre, the eighth wonder of the world, was the very first WWE Hall of Famer and will be remembered as one of the most famous wrestling icons of all time. Brian, what's your favorite memory of the late, great Andre the Giant?
Aside from my friend does a far better impression than I do, but he had the French accent, but the super bassy voice, right? And Bobby Heenan was his manager, and he would call him Bobby, but he would say, Bobby, like that. My favorite moment actually was a Saturday night's main event, a battle royal. I'm pretty sure it was in Detroit, Michigan. Andre the Giant was in there clearing house. He was the heel Andre, and it was leading up to the WrestleMania 3 match, and Hogan and Andre were in the same battle royal, but they were kind of in different corners, and they were the ring was crowded, and people were fighting, and they really couldn't get at each other, and they were kind of teasing fans with them getting their hands on each other. I remember Andre the Giant grabbing a handful of the genius Lanny Poffo's hair and delivering like a thunderous headbutt. I think he gave him two headbutts. And then dumped him over the top rope. And then Lanny Poffo, who, of course, was like bleeding out his scalp from somewhere, had to be stretchered off. I think he vomited. I think he had a concussion. Not sure what the issue was between Andre and Lanny Poffo, because that was kind of one of his big assaults, right, was he'd grab the guy by the back of the hair and headbutt him repeatedly. Except this time he rammed that big five head. That's like a six head. Rammed that big six head into Lanny Poffo's head, just crushing his head like a grape. What's your favorite moment?
Whenever I think of Andre the Giant, I always think of that WrestleMania 4 promo where he's with Bob Uecker, and Bob Uecker asks Andre if he could get his foot off his shoulder when it's really Andre's hand, and then Andre puts both of his hands around his neck, and Bob Uecker is so campy, his eyeballs are, you know, looking like he's going to pass out, and it's very funny.
That was a classic. I remember that well. Andre left a lot of great memories even when he was kind of beyond his prime, I guess, and could barely move around and a couple surgeries. He was an attraction until the very end.
That's right. Anybody want a peanut?
Yeah, Princess Bride. I think he had taken some time off to film that while he was recuperating from other things. Always entertaining. Looked like he kind of had a warm heart, right? At least a warm smile when he'd show like those 30 teeth per mandible and the upper palate. And kind of had like doubled the amount of teeth or whatever, which made his smile, you know, extra huge. But Andre the Giant, man, I miss him. There's never going to be another Andre, that's for sure. I've seen better teeth on a chainsaw.
After the Andre the Giant tribute fades to black, we are treated to some retro commercials, including WWF action figures. These are the Hasbros that I know and love. Brian, here's a clip.
WWF figures give you the fury of the Hitman.
And the bite of the Bulldog.
And the firepower Sergeant Slaughter.
WWF figures hit and sold separately, dig it?
Yeah, so Jeremy, they had a couple different versions of the Hogan, the Warrior. They had some dudes that would, you know, do a wind-up punch, right? Like Rick Rude was pretty awesome. You pull his hand back, you do a little headbutt, you know, or you could lift his arm up and kind of give the Rude Awaken into some hapless action figure. But the ones where you'd kind of push down and their legs would go up into their body cavity and they'd kind of shoot on a spring and then fall on their face, those were kind of ridiculous. I liked the ones that were the gorilla press, right? You could slam dudes, Hogan and Warrior. I think they made a next generation of them. Yeah, I had a Sergeant Slaughter. He was pretty bad. Kind of had these heavy fists. You could really hammer some of those figures. Jake the Snake had a little pot belly and the sunken chest there. It was pretty realistic. I used to love these guys. Which was your favorite?
I think if I had to pick a favorite, just because I know exactly where it's at and it has stayed with me over all of the years when the rest of them are in my parents' basement, would be Papa Shango with his top hat and voodoo paraphernalia around his neck.
That's awesome. I didn't even know they made a Papa Shango.
Yeah, it's got all the tattoos all over his chest.
That's cool. See, the Sergeant Slaughter, his hat was like permanently affixed, which was kind of a drag. I liked the guys with the accessories. Man, this fan with the mullet's kind of getting a little overzealous here, leaning over the barricade, making hand gestures at some of these super SARS as they make their entrance through the curtain.
Fan with a mullet, Brian. Can you be a little more specific? Speaking of mullets, we are back in the ring. Yokozuna is set to take on Tony DeVito. Interesting raw fact here.
Raw fact!
Tony DeVito is also an alumni of the original ECW in DeBaldi's team with Vito LaGrasso, who wrestled earlier as Von Krauss in that tag team affair. During this match, we have the pleasure of hearing from one Hacksaw Jim Duggan via phone call, and Hacksaw seems to be having trouble with the old connection here.
Yeah, I don't know if he didn't pay his Glen Falls bill or whatever, but they seem to be having trouble patching him in. Jeremy, how do you like Mr. Fuji in his pajama attire as opposed to his devious oriental foreigner / odd job attire?
Well, I bet you it saved money on dry cleaning because a tuxedo, you know, to get that thing pressed is not cheap. I would love to go to work in my pajamas.
What is this? His opponent there, he bull rushes him. I don't know if that's the smartest idea. Yokozuna throwing this savat kick from like downtown Manhattan practically, but this guy runs right into it and eats foot for his trouble.
Yokozuna very agile at this point for a big man, huge man. And I noticed that he actually has that fringe on his gi, for lack of a better term. I don't know if he just forgot to take it off, but in mid-leg drop off the ropes, he rips it off and throws it very slickly to Mr. Fuji. Master Fuji.
Very slickly, yeah. I thought maybe the same thing. I don't know if he was going for a new look, forgot it was on there, but I don't think he wears something similar to it later, right, where the fringe, kind of like Rikishi did, right, where they hang down the side of the belt. But this was just hanging down in the front, and it was about knee length or so. So when he kneeled on it and started to get up, I think it was giving him problems.
You know, I seem to remember, at least when I close my eyes and picture Yokozuna, a little bit more fabric through his backside and undercarriage. It's pretty G-stringy, for lack of a better term, on this episode of Raw.
It is, and I don't remember that bow being that pronounced.
Yokozuna wins with a bonsai drop, making short work of Tony DeVito. As Raw rolls on, we are going to take a brief moment to hear from one of our sponsors. We'll be right back with you.
Do you need a custom banner or logo for your Facebook, website, or blog? Or how about a video filmed and edited for your next project? Visit editahit.com for all things editing. We're dedicated to giving you the very best of video and photo editing services with a focus on quality, communication, and affordability. We are willing to work directly with you over the phone today to ensure your next project is a hit at editahit.com.
You are listening to the Raw Retrospective, brought to you by the Monday Night War podcast series at MondayNightWar.com.
Back from break, we are treated to a ringside interview with the current WWF Tag Team Champions, Money Incorporated, Ted DiBiase and Irwin R. Scheister, the father of Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas, if you were unaware, are responding to the words of Brutus the Barber Beefcake earlier in the episode, flipping a coin to see who should challenge Beefcake. How dastardly does a duo have to be when Jimmy Hart is the voice of reason? The mouth of the South is trying to convince Money Inc. that they should not be concerned with Beefcake and to focus on their tag team gold. I get the feeling that we may see Jimmy Hart turning a new leaf sooner than later.
And does anybody in wrestling have a better evil laugh than Ted DiBiase?
I don't know, but Vince McMahon sure would give him a run for his money. Check this out.
Approaching the ring with
It is the debut of the narcissist Lex Luger. In the first second we see Lex Luger's mug, a fan shoves the bird less than an inch from his face for an extended period of time as Lex, ever the pro, ignores it completely.
This guy was kind of like hanging out over the rail like a vulture, right? He was yelling at some of the other guys earlier on. I don't know if he was building up to like a crescendo.
We'll throw it up on our Twitter feed, at MON Night War. Welcome to New York. That's basically what they're saying to the total package here.
Now look at this ring girl that has just rolled into the ring here. She's probably the least attractive, I guess you could say, ring girl of the night. Maybe the least fit. She's not too attractive, and I think she was hand-selected from the accounting department to... Lex Luger now, the narcissist, is enraged that he saw a glimpse of her in his mirror while he was admiring his physique.
I love that she enters the ring in direct eye shot of Lex, but he's so enamored by the reflection of himself in the mirror that's been strategically placed mid-ring that he just is aloof to the fact that she's walking around with that ring card. He only notices her when he sees her reflection behind his shoulder in the mirror.
What a great performer. The subtleties, the nuances.
In an earlier episode, we actually talked about this promo by Mr. Perfect that we're being treated to right now, throwing the perfect pass to himself. Great stuff. Back in the ring, we have our third appearance in one night from ECW alumni Lex Luger's opponent, Jason Knight. Jason Knight was the self-proclaimed sexiest man alive, most known for his allegiance with Just Incredible, Lance Storm, and Dawn Marie as the Impact Players. How poetic is it that Lex Luger, kind of a big fish in WCW and NWA, entering WWF, basically brushing shoulders with Ric Flair on his way out? So we've got the total package, but a little bit of a makeover now that he's under the thumb of one Vince McMahon. How would you describe this outfit?
So picture Freddie Mercury, David Bowie, and Liberace. Freeze them in the same block of ice, right? Cryogenically freeze them in a block of ice. Maybe Evel Knievel was in there too. So Evel Knievel, Liberace, Freddie Mercury, David Bowie, freeze them together, break it up, put it together, throw some glitter on it, adorn it with those like metallic icicles that you'd put on a Christmas tree, the tree branches, you know, have him feather his hair back, and then like, here you have the narcissist.
Back in 1993, I didn't have instantaneous access to a dictionary via Siri, so I had to look up what narcissist actually was. And what it is tonight is someone who pins his opponent with a pinky as Lex Luger is victorious in his first appearance on Raw after his Royal Rumble debut.
Yeah, looking impressive. He delivers a pretty stiff clothesline, too, at one point in the match, taking some liberties with Jason Knight. Now, I'll tell you what, last week on Raw, I could have sworn in Episode 3 that they plugged the main event of this Raw being Typhoon versus Doink, which is why I tuned in at the time. Gotta catch that. If you're considering the main event the last match on the broadcast, the last match on Episode 4 here is Lex Luger and Jason Knight. I don't know why they didn't bill that. Maybe after editing, they shuffled things around and they said, you know what, with Doink pulling those hijinks and doing that role, grabbing the barnacles there of Tugboat, maybe we'll switch these around and put Jason Knight in the main event. What's happened, Jeremy? I thought this was going to be superstars versus superstars every week, no developmental talent. What's going on? Why are we're devolving here at the hands of Lex Luger?
I know there's a story about Vince McMahon being upset once Nitro starts to air that they are basically putting on superstar versus superstar matchups, giving away what they used to hold off for pay-per-views. And that speaks to what they're trying to accomplish here on Raw. I think basically they are having showcase matches, for lack of a better term, where you've got superstar versus enhancement talent, and then they throw at least one match where it is notable name versus notable name, if you can consider Typhoon to be that. We are back ringside with Vince McMahon, Randy Macho Man Savage, and Rob Bartlett, as Vince explains that Raw will be preempted by the Westminster International Dog Show on the USA Network. Episode 5 will air in 2 weeks from tonight in 1993, with a 16-man over-the-top rope battle royal, as well as Ted DiBiase versus Brutus the Barber Beefcake. And that's it for Episode 4 of Monday Night Raw. Another one is in the books, Brian. Your thoughts?
Well, first off, you know, this Westminster Dog Show, I mean, this... So they had, like, some kind of deal with USA. Raw's, like, USA's number one show, the longest weekly episodic program, blah, blah. Even when they were getting strangled to death by Nitro and the Raiders, they would get preempted by this thing. And it's not like they had a USA 2 they could go to, or, hey, let's show Raw on ESPN 2. Fans literally had to take a break. Some fans would tune in. They'd be like, oh, man, Raw must have been canceled. You know, it's just a dog show. I'll watch Nitro. I could never understand the power that this Westminster dog show had over wrestling fans. This power they had over the WWE. Ridiculous.
I know as a pre-teenager myself at this point, those were the weeks that I looked forward to the least. Let's wrap this show up with the good, the bad, and the ugly. Starting with the good, for me, it was the A-plus level enhancement talent that worked almost every match, all moving on to some level of notoriety with the ECW fan base in just a few short years from here. Rob Bartlett will likely have a permanent spot for me on the list under the bad category until he is ousted from this seat. And the ugly is just Brutus the Barber Beefcake attempting to pull at the heartstrings and going way too long with his down-and-out life story prior to a devastating parasailing accident, only to be saved by the hand of the immortal Hulk Hogan. I would like to give honorable mention in the distinction of ugly to Doink's roll-up pin over Typhoon, because I have never seen a yank on the tights that came basically from the grundle area of a 400-pound man.
It certainly is a dog-eat-dog world, isn't it? Especially when you've got the puppies.
Hey!
And I've got my wiener.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna vomit.
What does that mean?
And for those keeping count at home, Vince McMahon did not utter the phrase, "What a maneuver," so his count did not grow on this episode of Monday Night Raw. And that wraps up episode 4. Thank you for taking the time to listen. I am at Wrestling Savant. He is at Flawless Brian. Hit us up on Twitter. I challenge you to come up with a name for Doink's roll-up using Typhoon's trunks earlier on in this episode of Raw. And remember, you can always go to MondayNightWar.com for the full experience that the Monday Night War podcast series has to offer. It is there you can connect with the show's Twitter and Facebook page, as well as our RSS feed. The Monday Night War podcast series is available using the device of your choice. Just plug the link to that RSS feed into your preferred method of subscribing, downloading, and listening to recordings. This will be a weekly series covering each episode of Monday Night Raw, and stick around for even more content as we bring you the Nitro Party and Displaced Wrestling Fan recordings. This digital recording is property of MondayNightWar.com and cannot be reproduced or redistributed in any way. MondayNightWar.com, the Raw Retrospective, Nitro Party, and Displaced Wrestling Fan recordings are not affiliated in any way with WWE. Until next week, thank you for listening.